customers are developing their own sustainability goals. And sometimes welfare is in that same sustainability bucket. Sometimes it's separate. But there's often a person maybe in a customer in a company that has these responsibilities for welfare, the welfare direction for them, as well as the sustainability direction. So they are asking for and sometimes demanding, what can you do, you as a supplier of chicken, to help me meet my goals as it relates to, let's say, carbon and or some other water use and or those kinds of sustainability pieces.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. bioMérieux is a world leader in the field of diagnostics for more than 60 years. From pathogen detection to genomics and data applications, bioMérieux helps poultry manufacturers going beyond the test results. You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins. AB Vista offers pioneering products and technical services tailored to the poultry industry to help them succeed. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Corver, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. If you find this interview interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Our guest today is Dr. Bruce Stewart Brown. Bruce joined Purdue Farms as Chief Science Officer in 1998. In this role, he works with the various businesses within the company on strategy and implementation associated with product innovation, live production, and plant processing. This work focus includes food safety, welfare, quality, antibiotic use, sustainability, and production efficiency. Prior to joining Purdue, he was the Director of Global Technical Services for Poultry at various companies, including Solvay Labs, Salisbury Labs, Fort Dodge Animal Health, and he earned his BS in Animal Science from Iowa State University and also his DSM from, DVM from Iowa State. He's a diplomat of the American College of Poultry Veterinarians. Dr. Stewart Brown has published over a dozen articles and research papers. He's recognized globally for his expertise in poultry health and management, and he speaks regularly and is featured in national media on the topic of antibiotic use in poultry and animal care. Welcome to the program, Bruce.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Nice to talk about some things, and I love this venue, so thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. I'm looking forward to it. How did you get interested in working with poultry?
You know, I was raised in the Midwest, in Illinois and Iowa. My father was a rural country veterinarian who was focused on, had a mixed practice, but we had a lot of pigs and cattle in that area. You know, my dad encouraged us to ride with him as long as we worked, as long as we helped, we could spend time with him and the farm, go to the farms and the clinic as well. So I had a sense that food and ag, I was really kind of interested in food and ag and wanted to. I actually first went to school engineering pre-med, thinking, okay, well, I'll get an engineering degree and work on, then see if I could go through med school, maybe artificial arms or hearts or things like that, that would combine engineering and medicine. And actually, when I got going on it, I thought engineers, these were not my people, and that maybe my people were over in animal science and then veterinary medicine seemed much more appealing to me after a while than human medicine. So that's how I went through it, BS in animal science. And then I in vet school, I actually did a turkey project with a pharmacologist during a summer rotation. And he goes, you know, the poultry industry has veterinarians, and there's a few jobs in poultry associated with veterinary medicine. And it was clear to me I wanted to do food animal. And And so poultry became, and I really loved what I heard is you get a ton of numbers and you get a sense of a lot of things associated with health other than therapy. So all that really appealed to me. I was then lucky enough to get a job right out of vet school with this vaccine company, which you named those names. That was all one company as it changed names, as many times that does. And then 12 or 13 years in, I was lucky enough to become a field veterinarian at Purdue. I became the introduction described the chief science officer, which I am not currently, but I did. I was a field veterinarian, then food safety and quality for a number of years, then food safety, quality, and live operations, and then like the technical part of the business that evolved into this chief science officer position. So long story, but that's the evolution. You know.
So as chief science officer, it sounds like you wear a lot of hats. You talked about production efficiency and food safety and welfare and antibiotic use and sustainability and cost. So let's talk about what it means to balance all those things, production efficiency, particularly with some of the other pressures related to food safety or welfare or sustainability.
Yeah, I think that is the deal. You know, that is some of all those backgrounds led to this position, at least for us at Purdue. The idea that, wow, all these are tied together. And this started for me in food safety and quality, which was, could you come in and work on food safety and quality and work on it before the plant so that you didn't have to kind of use the plant to make sure things were safe or make sure that it was of high quality? What can you do before that? And so it kind of built on that. There's a lot of things that are important to kind of get into and prevent or do if you can do through something like feed or if you can do something with management styles and it's better for the animal and better for the products, what would those be? How much would they cost? How might you steer through that? It became clear to us that we kind of needed to take that off to the side and make it a thing and make, you know, it's important for us. We have a brand. We're interested to move our brand forward to have the best chicken you can possibly have. But you got to earn that. And some of those things are probably going to involve innovative thoughts about doing something different. And again, if you do this, what does it do to some of the other aspects of the business? Can you kind of help the company steer through all the pushes and pulls associated with these different subjects like welfare, safety, product quality, and now sustainability has become a real big, you know, what's the carbon component to that change that you'd like to make? So quite a evolution for us and quite a evolution for the industry to kind of put all that together.
It sounds like a very conscious and holistic approach.
Yeah, I do think it's important. If you are just focused on cost, you'll make some decisions. But if you start to throw in carbon, if you start to throw in welfare outcomes, if you start to throw in salmonella carriage levels, you will make some different decisions, I think, and some of them will not be least cost. But you have to help the company and help others understand, if we do this, here's the net benefit for hopefully way right down to the consumer, you know, kind of thing. So anyhow, that's the challenge, and that's a pretty cool job.
Where do you think the animal agriculture industry is in relation to that balance?
I think we're off. I think it's one of the things that I think that transparency, the effort around transparency or the evolving I would even call it a tsunami coming around transparency, is going to show that perhaps there's some balance that needs to be rethought, or a balance of practices and approaches that needs to be rethought. I think the metrics actually are getting better on some of those things, and so it kind of shows you now. For instance, we've been doing some life cycle assessments on this versus that, and we didn't do that even 5 years ago. So if somebody said, "What do you think about this versus that as it relates to carbon?" we wouldn't have it. We wouldn't have a number. So you can't really have a decent conversation, or I don't think you can, until you kind of get a number. Here's the metrics important for welfare. Here's the production efficiency metrics. We know those really well. Here's some food safety metrics we intend to use, and let's do an LCA, and then let's decide, you know, how all that can be put together to make the best possible decision.
That's a good point, because least cost is easy to understand. And when you have all these different factors, how do you put a weight or a value to them to come up with what hopefully is the right, or at least a good decision?
Yeah, you know, that's the deal. We as an industry, we as a company, all that, the poultry industry in particular, but the food animal industry in general, have great numbers on feed conversion, on livability, on processability. You know, we have just great numbers to manage with. And then we got great people that can manage, that have learned the ups and downs of all those metrics. We need to do the same thing in these other areas. We need good metrics that we trust, that we start to understand how to move them, and so we can use those in addition to the performance metrics. And they're coming. You know, there's quite a bit of it moving along, but it rarely has the view or sits beside the production efficiency numbers. And it needs to. That's where it needs to go, you know.
Right. So there are probably internal pressures or internal forces that are moving your company in that direction. If we look across the industry, what are some of the external factors that play into that balance?
Sure. Well, first of all, our customers, you know, are interested in, and one of them, maybe the evolving one that's going very fast, is customers are developing their own sustainability goals. And sometimes welfare is in that same sustainability bucket. Sometimes it's separate. But there's often a person, maybe, in a customer, in a company that has these responsibilities for welfare, the welfare direction for them, as well as the sustainability direction. So they are asking for, and sometimes demanding, you know, that they, what can you do, you as a supplier of chicken, to help me meet my goals as it relates to, let's say, carbon and or some other water use and or those kinds of sustainability pieces. And that might be the case for a welfare position as well. So the companies that buy chicken and have their own brand are managing to a certain set of metrics going forward, and they need help. Another external input is for instance, NGOs. They are often in a particular subject and have a particular expertise, and they would like to move their agenda forward. Some of it that actually makes sense and actually lines up. At least in our case, we've found that some of the NGO areas of emphasis are the same as ours. And so kind of interacting with them and working to explain, at the very least, explain where we're going on a particular subject kind of can get to a decent conversation, sometimes not. So it depends. Government itself, of course, is an evolving external force as it relates to some of these different subjects and weighing in with additional and evolving regulations around, let's say, food safety or labeling claims, things such as that. So all those pieces are coming in. And we spend a lot of time kind of with our own strategy, of course, but seeing how it aligns with folks from the rest of the that we look to serve and to be successful with. Right.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe and share it with your friends and family. You can also set the notifications on from our channel so you don't miss any other upcoming episodes. And please feel free to leave us your comments anytime. Your feedback is always valuable to us. So let's talk a little bit more about those external pressures. You mentioned consumers, I think primarily from the standpoint of large purchasers, the supermarkets and institutions. You mentioned the government. But what about the individual consumer or maybe NGOs that have a particular agenda that might not be aligned with animal agriculture? How does a company deal with those sorts of challenges or pressures?
I would talk about those a little bit in two ways. The consumer itself. So we have a really kind of highly developed consumer feedback process at Purdue. We ask for feedback. We have an 800 number on the packages. We have a Facebook page. We have five or six different ways that a consumer can give us feedback. And we assimilate that feedback every month and take a look at it. And we take a look at it a couple of ways. One is people buy this product all the time from us and they're not happy with it. Something is different from it. What's going on with that? And generally we understand that by the fact that we know what the typical consumer complaint rate is, and it jumped last month. That's probably us. Two standard deviations from the mean on the complaint per million pounds, probably a significant thing to look at. But the other part that's just as interesting is when they call us and have opinions about how a bird was raised and or how a product that has this claim, how do we fulfill that claim? And so we can have a sense and have had a sense of the consumer's evolving sensitivities or needs. For instance, that's where our approach to antibiotics really came from, was seeing that more and more consumers were asking us, I heard you use a lot of antibiotics. This was 25 years ago when we were kind of pulling this together. We heard you use a lot of antibiotics. What do you use them for? Is it really because you're hiding or covering up poor management? Don't you think you could figure out another way to do that? And that became our position on, or evolved our position on antibiotic use, but also evolved our position on animal care, how we raise chickens. So the consumer's input to us is really strong and personal. Then the other part is NGOs weighing in, and we judge that pretty much through being as honest as we possibly can with them. If they have really honest questions about chickens and about how chickens are raised, we have invited them in. We have spent a lot of time showing what we're doing. And then if they have feedback on what they think our direction is, we listen to it. And we also try to say really clearly, I understand that you believe this, but we believe differently. This is the direction we're headed as it relates to that particular subject. So we try to be as honest as we possibly can about where we're headed, and also listen as intently. If it's an honest kind of, we're here for the, you know, we're interested in this subject, understanding that people are eating poultry and eating meat, and we just like to get involved in this or express our opinion as it relates to this particular subject. Good. Let's talk about that. We spend a lot of time with that at a really high level in the company.
Yeah. So the communication goes two ways. It's gathering information and concerns from customers and from NGOs. But there's also a communication from the company. What role do you think education has in that balance?
Well, it's huge. And education has evolved quite a bit, at least in terms of the, for us. One is we might have had a lot of, I know we did, 15 years ago had a statement policy about how we stun poultry. Yeah, or a statement policy about what's in our feed. And it would be like a one-page letter, and it would be very vague and maybe even non-committal. Having said that, today it's much more like, we have actually a year, once a year, we have what we call an Animal Care Summit, which is a couple-day event where we ask NGOs, customers, our farmers, some academia, all to come, and we usually get about 150, 200 people come to one place, and we discuss issues, in this case, around animal welfare and animal care. We have stated initiatives we do every year. We report out on those. We take a ton of questions. We usually show something in person. This is where I'm getting to the contrast between a letter and actually taking a bunch of people with an interest to go show them the farm or show them a controlled atmosphere stunning system or to show them automated catching, so they could see it for themselves. And this has been valuable, I think, for a number of things. One is that people see and understand and feel better about the subject or get a higher level of value and education around this subject by seeing it. But it's educational for us because they ask us additional, like I hear what you say and I see this and I don't think the two are jiving. You should rethink this. We've had some really good, helpful rebalancing of our own, our own thoughts around subjects because of this kind of personal and in-person approach. So education, by showing, we do a tour somewhere in the company every other working day. We take the tour part seriously. If somebody's really interested, government officials, schools, customers, if they NGOs, if they have this question and they'd like to see it, we have a very high level position in the company that we don't hand off the tours. We try to do them at a really high level, so we catch the feedback. And really a big evolution for us, but also really helpful.
Yeah, those are some great examples of the way that you're engaging your customers. Looking at the big picture, how does the poultry industry in general engage, as industry groups or with academia or with government? How do we get the message out to consumers and individual NGOs about what the industry is doing and how it's moving forward and responding?
A lot of it is being willing to open up your doors and I say this a lot. I say this to ourselves, but I also say it, for the interest in industry, is if you look at something that you're doing and a couple of you are out or you go out as a group, an internal group, and you're looking at something, and there's pieces of this that are embarrassing to you, or that you are embarrassed by, you should fix them. I mean, because at some point, all of that needs, you know, will be, if you're being super transparent, you ought to be proud of explaining it to them. Not everybody will understand it, but you shouldn't be scared to explain or show what your feed, you know, what your feed entails, what's the ingredients in this feed, kind of what a chicken house looks like on the inside, you know, every aspect of a hatchery. Okay, if there's something about that you don't like, you should get after that, because at some point you need to explain that to everyone. Try explaining it to your family that are not involved in it, or take them on a tour. If you're scared to take some other folks on a tour, take extended family, take your wife's family or your husband's family that are not maybe a part of your life, and see what they think about it. Get some feedback. And, you know, that's the real kind of evolution, and be just as honest as you possibly can about the ups and downs. Not terrible. Look, we make mistakes. We are a big company. We make some mistakes, own them, and fix them, and tell people don't be embarrassed about the fact that you found something you're not proud of, and that you fixed it, and you're going forward in a better way. That's really hard. That's really hard for the animal industry, or the food animal industry, I think, to decide that what they were doing or what they are currently doing is not perfect. And also to explain, this is a really good example for us. When we started to work on reducing and eliminating antibiotics, we didn't tell anybody about it. We didn't tell anybody about it for 15 years. We're just kind of working on it till a shoe dropped and we started to use the label claim no antibiotics ever. But we had changed feed, we had changed management, we had worked on you know, all these things. We didn't tell anybody. When it came to animal care and the evolution of animal care, we decided we're going to do this a different way. We're going to explain where we're at and what we're working on and help people understand where we're going. And that was a kind of totally different thought. But it has been a good thing, because people weigh in. They want to know where you're going. They want to know where you're at. Love to know where you're going. Don't lie to them. Own your problems. You know, just keep going with that idea. You know?
Yeah, and I think that's so important in maintaining that social license. You know, as society gets further and further away from being familiar with animal production, I think that what you're describing is just really, you know, doing as much as we can to make people feel comfortable and engaged in knowing where their food comes from.
Yeah, definitely an evolution for the industry, I think it makes sense. You know, for those that are interested, they want good, honest answers, and they'll make decisions based on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we say this all the time. You have to earn somebody going into the store and buying your product. They're voting every day based on buying what they buy at the store or at a food service restaurant. So you got to earn their vote and keep going with that.
So looking down the road a little bit, what are some things that you think will become high priority in the next couple of years? And maybe what are some things that some changes that might take a little bit longer to happen?
Well, in the area of welfare, I think the industry has to think through. If you study welfare, and if you are in the, you know, kind of welfare vernacular, you often talk about the five freedoms or the five domains. And if you hop into that and buy that philosophy, I think there's a number of things we do really well. For instance, access to feed and water, general health and nutrition components are pieces where we've worked really hard on them. But if you said there's a weakness in the industry, there generally is in the fourth freedom, which is the ability or allowing the animal to express natural behaviors. So if you said, first of all, it'd be nice, and this is important, we did this, is take the five freedoms and judge yourself where you sit in that. And if you identify a weakness, you go, so should we get after that? What should we do as it relates to addressing that particular weakness? Because it's going to take some time. We're going to have to change, you know, quite a few things. So this area of natural behaviors is a really big area, and one that I think is a weakness of the current, the existing industry, and something we'll have to, you know, for us, it means spending a lot of time with enrichments, understanding light in that way, space in that way, and trying to understand what a chicken's natural behaviors are. And the fact that we're either trying to suppress them, or certainly the other part's maybe not right, which is we're not going to have an exercise class per se, but something that allows an animal to move and act like a chicken, that makes sense. And so these kinds of challenges, or this kind of evolution over, I think the chicken house is going to change. The chicken house has been designed, and this hurts some folks' feelings, it shouldn't. We've done a great job designing chicken houses around bird comfort, and should have, you know, temperature control and air quality and all that. But the other aspect of this is really two dimensional. It's floor and feed and water. And if you said, so is that what a chicken house should look like? And if it isn't, what should it look like? And how are you going to get there without going backwards, you know, on some of the things we've gotten so good at? So that I think the chicken house is going to evolve to something quite, quite interesting, and maybe more of a chicken's house than it is kind of currently. I think how we catch chickens, that also, if you think about it, some of the biggest opportunities, or some maybe the roughest day in a chicken's life, is the day that it goes to the processing plant. We could argue there's some worse days, but then the other area. So I think the catching chickens has. And transporting chickens, it also has to evolve quite a bit in the next several years. And I also believe the hatchery will have a pretty dramatic change as it relates to what that looks like, and some really good moves forward. And it won't be just a welfare thing. I think it'll show up in food safety. I think it'll show up in product quality. I think all those things, if we kind of pay attention to them, like I said before, and get good metrics around them, first of all, we make sure they don't go the wrong way. And second of all, we'll see some things that go, wait a second, that is a step forward in a number of different areas. So these win-win-wins, those are big deals.
So I think overall you're feeling pretty confident and positive about the future of the poultry production.
Oh yeah, I think here's the thing that's really important is that we can't do these. There's some really cool things that are going to happen and that we can do. We have to make sure that a consumer values them, that they are moves that consumers understand and value. So that will take a lot of education. It will take a lot of debate amongst us, as it relates to, is that really better? How do you defend and or describe why that is a better thing? And so let's have it, because I think it will move forward. These things will move forward just like production efficiency has, because we got good people that can make good decisions with good data, and the chicken's going to benefit from it. The products are going to benefit from it. the whole thing. It's pretty cool. I think it's, I think the opportunity for for the evolution of chicken, it's a really great product. I think there are so many things that are pretty cool about the next 5 or 10 years.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Beringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available.
Probiotech International, creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information.
Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition, your partner for extra animal performance.
Probiotech International is driven by innovation, inspired by nature, and passionate about contributing to a more sustainable, safe, and healthy food system. We work closely with our customers to deliver solutions to current and future challenges facing the animal production sector while using natural active ingredients such as chemotypes and polyphenols derived from plant extracts and spices. Our products follow a rigorous scientific validation process. They are then proven to work through thorough field research, certified for quality, and then brought to market as a complete and effective solution. In a world filled with rapid change, let Probiotech International deliver your opportunities for solutions and savings to your program. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information.
So let's change gears a little bit. Do you have a go-to poultry-related book or resource that you rely on?
I spend a lot of time with avian diseases. I'm on the editorial board and have quite an investment in that journal. Weirdly, that journal started the same year I was born. And I've spent most of my life trying to catch up with all the work that is in that, you know, journal over the years, because it's amazing, you know, what people knew even back then. I'm focused, or kind of spend quite a bit of time on one aspect of that journal. It's the area of case reports. So mm-hmm. We have a small group that is focused on understanding the value of case reports. If we can encourage more or better case reports, what does a great case report look like? So this aspect, you know, Avian Disease is a cool journal because it's not only the publishing research science, but also the clinician component of it. And that's how it grew up. That's how it's pretty strong compared to many other journals. But you gotta nurture both aspects. You know, you gotta, you know, make sure that you can grow in a really high quality way, both of those aspects. So spend a lot of time on that. And that's really a neat area. Those are neat folks, and it has such a neat history, and we all rely on it, you know. Mm-hmm. So
what about a non-agricultural book or resource?
Yeah, so I have two kids, a boy and a girl, and several years ago we decided we were going to have our own book club, the three of us, and we didn't leave mom out in particular, but we were going to go. So we're going to have a book club, and it's called The Lollygaggers, because we don't get many books read. Somebody decides this is the book I want everybody to read. And they become the leader, you know, the person that leads the critique or the discussion. We try to keep it small. And we haven't got through many books. So at some point, by the way, then we turned to podcasts, because everybody thought we could get more done with podcasts than we were getting done with books. Although I haven't totally given up on books with the kids, but me too. I mean, I'm part of the problem. So anyhow, podcasts, now the deal. Each of us pick a podcast, and it can vary so much. My daughter picked one on how landfills operate, you know, and what's all the science or kind of the details around landfills. then we did a lithium battery podcast. And so, you know, some of it's pretty, pretty diverse, a lot of food stuff though, and, you know, food and ag stuff, but anyhow, it's pretty cool. It's not as, kind of, it goes up and down as people get busy, but I like the idea.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of fun.
I guess I could say that. Yeah.
And there's probably a podcast for just about every interest out there.
There is. And, we need to get this podcast on the list.
Well, Dr. Bruce Stewart Brown, thank you so much for joining us today on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Very good. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me. Good talks. Thanks.
That concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is invaluable to us. Visit our website at wisenetics.com and learn all about our other podcast segments, including poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed mill, crops, and even pet food. I'm Doug Corver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.